Hey, this is Peggy McKee. I am the CEO of Career Confidential and also the senior recruiter at PHC Consulting. And I'm here with Lawrence Shatkin today. And I'm going to let Lawrence tell you a little bit about himself, but we're going to talk about a very special book that he has just authored. But first, Lawrence, can you tell the folks that are listening to this a little bit about yourself? Why should we be listening to you?
I've been working in the field of career information now for 35 years. And I've written lots of books during that time, mostly about some of the high-paying careers and some of the careers with the best outlook. And as a result, it's something that I've developed some expertise in.
And you're really a researcher, right? Like you and I were talking because I do a lot of career coaching, and obviously at Career Confidential we have a lot of products to help people with their careers. But what your specialty is not the coaching, but that you know a lot about all the different career segmentations and the impact, certainly, of the financial piece of those segments.
Exactly. Yeah, I am a researcher as well as a writer, and I'm always trying to tease out a little more information from the available information that I can get. A lot of this comes from the U.S. Department of Labor. But I've done things like I've run correlations and done things like that to try to figure out what is it that makes one occupation different from another. What is it that makes something high paying? What is it that makes something locate in certain regions of the country rather than other regions of the country? So these are some of the things I look at.
So really, the person who should get your book is the person who is interested in guiding their career, not just allowing it to guide them, right? And be meaningful and decisive about where they want to go. And the reason that they can't just go to the Bureau of Labor Statistics is because to the common person going into there, it's very difficult, almost impossible to really gain any perspective just from the way they have it aligned. So you've sort of melted that down and put it into segments that are easier to chew?
That's my approach. I try to make it simple. I try to make it explain things in terms that everybody understands, and I try to gather a lot of different sort of figures in one place. So, for example, when I have a list of occupations, I usually include not only the earnings but also the outlook for them in terms of the percentage of growth and the number of annual job openings.
Well, that's very important, right? Because just because the earnings are high, if there's no growth going to happen there, or if you're expecting negative growth, right, then you don't want to be jumping into that.
And, of course, the other thing is that these are just the economic rewards of the occupation. There are many other things that are related to the occupation that would make it suitable for you or not, the kinds of activities that go on, the work environment, the kinds of skills that are demanded of you. And I try to distill that information. And, again, that can be found in many different places. I try to put them in one place and do it in terms that people will understand.
Perfect. All right, so let's get to the topic at hand. Okay, so Lawrence, the question I have for you today is I'm looking at your book, Your Guide to High-Paying Careers. Now, where is this available at? I know that I got a copy straight from you, but if the common person wants this book, where do they get this at, Lawrence?
Amazon's a good place to get it. It's listed on there, and I don't know exactly which bookstores may or may not have that. But
okay, so it's in some bookstores. It's on Amazon. Is it also available like on the Kindle as well as in paper?
I believe so.
Okay, cool. All right. I only use books on Kindle. Isn't that crazy? All right, so what
it's
I'm looking
convenient.
Yeah, it is. It's just wonderful. It's wonderful. And, I mean, I love paper books too, but to be able to carry 25 books with you or 30, 50 books, it's insane, right?
Yes,
so I'm looking at page 2 of Your Guide to High-Paying Careers, and specifically I was very interested on why you chose the 173 highest paying occupation. So my first question is, why 173? Why not 200 or 100 or 150? Why 173?
Well, I looked at occupations that were above the average. And, you know, so I looked at what the cutoff was for what an average number in the income in the United States. And I looked at those that were above that level, and that's how many it worked out. And I also eliminated certain occupations that had very, very low growth or very few job openings. So, and there are even a few occupations everybody knows about, like actor or dancer, that there just isn't even good salary information about. So after you've eliminated those, you've got 173. I know it's a kind of a funny number, but there you have it.
I know. I was like, man, there's got to be a story behind that. Okay, so the top of the list here, we've got the physicians and surgeons, 187 annual earnings and a growth rate of 24.4%. openings are
187,200 plus.
Plus, so they're either where they should be or more.
Yes, the Department of Labor doesn't record doesn't report information for any more than that number. So it's actually probably quite a bit higher, actually.
Right.
And obviously, if you're in some very high-paying specialties, surgeons, psychiatrists, you'll be doing even better.
Yeah, but you know what's interesting about this is some of these so like chief executives is the next one. I'm going to give them a couple because they can't see this while we're talking about it, right? Then dentists, mm-hmm. then petroleum engineers, then architects, then computer or MIS, management information systems, marketing, pharmacists, podiatrists, judges. Now, what's interesting about that is because, you know, you said earlier in one of our calls, hey, it's not just compensation. And I'm looking at that. You know, a physician and a surgeon, they're encountering, they're having to pay many of these guys, even if their annual earnings are that. Now, is earnings after, so like their insurance that they have to take out or for liability and things like that, that would come after earnings?
That that would come after this figure, yes.
Yeah, so a person could be making, like, let's say $180,000, but they've got a fee that comes as a part of their role, right, like that liability insurance. You can't hardly be a physician.
Yes, it would take some off of the top of that, yes.
Right. And yet, like, if you're an MIS person, you don't have any fees like that.
No, but you do have things. There are some expenses that come along with that. For example, a lot of people want to belong to a professional association. And in some of those cases, like pharmacists, there's things like licensing that's involved.
Mm-hmm,
continuing education is another thing that, particularly in the medical careers that are listed here, people have to get. So they have to pay for that.
Mm-hmm.
So these are continuing expenses.
That's right.
Probably apart from insurance.
Yes. Well, and it's just interesting to look at this. You've got sales managers over here. It's title number 16, which I was surprised. It's just very interesting to look at these people. And I wonder the median occupation. So a person should look at this book, look at where they're at. Like if I'm in chemicals, then I'd want to look at the chemical engineers and see if where my pay is there. And when you look at that, see the growth there is only 5.9%, and annual openings are only 1,100.
Yes, you have to realize that.
Wow.
That's, to consider.
That's,
I mean,
big, isn't it?
The income only means you're only going to get the income if you get the job. So you
right.
have to look at what this. Now, granted, sometimes, and by the way, you may wonder why I have two figures there, both the growth and the openings. And you have to realize if you have a very small occupation, it can be growing by leaps and bounds, and you still employ very few people.
Yes, absolutely. Well, actuaries, look at that. Actuaries, see, well, you may not be looking at the same page I'm looking at, but you've got 26% growth, which you would think is really high, but it's only 1,800 people. When you look at that, and this is just over the U.S., that's nothing. That's not
good.
That's
1,800 job openings. So, yeah.
Yes, that's not enough.
And you have to consider job openings means a couple of things. It's both because of growth and because of turnover. So if actuaries, they tend to stay in one place and work, increase their status in the occupation by passing exams. They don't tend to move around a great deal, and that's another thing that holds down job openings.
It's high satisfaction possibly, or at least
yes.
maybe not satisfaction, but certainly sticking
security
power, right?
Too.
Yes.
Security is another thing, yes. And another thing
and low-risk people. Low-risk occupations probably have lower turnover, right?
When you say low-risk, you mean like physical danger?
People that don't
that
like low-risk, like accountants
yes.
So you might see lower turnover there, right?
Yeah, that's something. And another thing, by the way, is how much you put into it, into getting into that field. You take someone, for example, who works in fast food. You don't need to take a lot of education or training to in order to do that. So you're not putting all that much into getting that kind of work. So you can leave it very easily and leave very little behind. Whereas if you go to the expense and trouble and all the dedication it takes to become a doctor, you're unlikely to walk away from that and say, actually, I think I'd rather become a painter. So that's another thing that causes a
difference. So that's going to be your investment, right? Your upfront investment.
Yeah. Yes. So when
But you know, in business school, they teach you that you've got to ignore upfront investment when you're making forward-looking decisions.
Yeah, there's that too. But, you know, people, there are all those
But people don't think that way, do they?
No, and another thing is, by the time you've reached that, when you've got that far into a career that takes a lot of preparation, you've probably encountered all the minuses that there are in the career that would make you drop out. So if you discover in medical school that you can't stand the sight of blood, you're going to drop out then. It's not something that's going to happen to you 10 years down the road that you're going to suddenly discover that you can't stand the sight of blood.
Absolutely.
So that's another thing that causes a lot of these occupations to have a lot of job tenure, or at least occupational tenure. People stay in it for the long haul. And by the way, another thing is that a number of these, many of these high-paying occupations do not have a lot of physical demands. In fact, very few of them have high physical demands. So people can go on, particularly when they've consider how much they've invested in getting into it to start out, they can stay into it to an advanced age, and they may not retire at 65, or they may be going on into their 80s or further. If you think of judges and think of the people on the Supreme Court, that's a pretty old group of people. And so that's another thing that will cut down on turnover, the fact that you just don't get burned out physically. Now, there are some cases where people get burned out mentally. They can't take the stress any longer, and so they may drop out of the career for that reason.